Good afternoon. My name is Jessica Salvaggio, and I am a CDC CFTE Applied Epidemiology Fellow focusing on healthcare-associated infections at the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. So thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm going to describe one of my major projects as a fellow. Colleagues and I evaluated the 2013 Health Officer Order that was implemented to mandate vaccination among healthcare workers in Los Angeles County. Influenza and pneumonia are the eighth leading causes of death in the U.S. in 2013, according to CDC. CDC reported nearly 60,000 deaths associated with influenza and pneumonia in 2013. In addition, a study published in JAMA conducted by CDC indicated on average more than 200,000 people in the U.S. are hospitalized each year for respiratory and heart condition illnesses associated with seasonal influenza virus infections, and this study was based on hospital records. ACIP recommended annual influenza vaccination for everyone 6 months and older for 2015-16. And in addition, because healthcare personnel may transmit influenza vaccination, or influenza infection rather, a Healthy People 2020 goal was established to have a 90% coverage among all healthcare personnel. I have two primary objectives for this talk today, and they include discussing the background and rationale describing influenza vaccination among healthcare personnel. And the second item that we'll discuss is the evaluation findings from the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health Health Officer Order that mandated this influenza vaccination. Almost 3% of 6,000 influenza-related hospitalizations were classified as hospital onset influenza. During the 2010 to 11 influenza season, lab-confirmed influenza-related hospitalizations were identified using the Influenza Hospitalization Surveillance Network, also known as FluServNet. And this is a network that conducts population-based surveillance in 16 states. The clinical course of hospital onset cases was remarkably different compared to community onset cases, as you might imagine. For example, hospital onset cases had a greater length of stay, greater proportion with intensive care unit admissions, greater proportion requiring medical ventilation, and greater proportion of dying or discharged to a long-term care facility compared with community onset cases. These nosocomial cases are most likely associated with influenza among healthcare personnel. Data suggest up to 25% of healthcare personnel are infected with influenza each season. And not only do healthcare personnel shed virus one day prior to symptom onset, they also tend to continue to work with symptoms. I wanted to show you a meta-analysis of high-quality studies suggests that vaccination reduces mortality and illness. This review of evidence shows reductions in all-cause patient mortality of 29% in a pooled analysis, as well as 42% reduction in influenza-like illness in patients. Therefore, over 300 facilities nationwide enforce mandatory vaccination among healthcare personnel. And there's scientific evidence that indicates mandating influenza vaccination increases healthcare personnel vaccination rates. And because of this, professional societies support mandatory healthcare personnel vaccination. And I've listed several here, but a couple of those include IDSA, APIC, and SHEA. It's important to note that what makes mandates even more important is that our current approaches to encourage healthcare personnel vaccination isn't working. Although in 2007, California Senate Bill 739 was passed, and that Senate bill required facilities to provide free influenza vaccination. It also required healthcare personnel to provide written declination. But despite that, by 2011 to 12, vaccination rates in LA County varied, and they ranged from 22% to 97%. An evaluation of the bill showed little impact on healthcare personnel who declined vaccination. And CDC data from the same year showed that only 1 in 3 healthcare personnel were vaccinated. What's required to improve vaccination coverage is not voluntary vaccination. The University of California, Irvine really worked hard at increasing their healthcare personnel vaccination rates at the School of Medicine and at their medical center. By the first year, which is indicated here by the first bar, Their vaccination campaign implemented mobile vans to off-site clinical areas. By the second year, which is the second bar, they required mandatory declination and sent mobile carts to on-site clinics, units, and grand rounds. The third year, they saw a decrease in their vaccination rates, but they didn't implement any new elements to their vaccination campaign. But by the fourth year, here, which is the fourth bar, they tried something new. It wasn't until they implemented a mandatory flu policy and real-time non-compliance feedback to managers that their healthcare personnel vaccination rate jumped from 60% to 86%. And in the final year, they reached the Healthy People 2020 goal of at least 90% of healthcare personnel that were vaccinated. And the change in the final season shown here was the dean linked the School of Medicine vaccination non-participation to a loss of good standing. The dean of the School of Medicine provided line items lists of non-participants to department chairs with a reminder of the importance of good standing, and failure to meet good standing milestones could have resulted in withholding of a proportion of departmental budgets. Experiences like this have led to adoption of mandates across many counties in California. As all of these counties have implemented these mandates, we were curious what evidence there was for that countywide policies are actually effective. So we decided to address this in Los Angeles County. And at the time we implemented the health officer order, this was in 2013, there were 14 jurisdictions that had a masking policy in place. So our mandate was implemented through a health officer order in 2013, as I mentioned, and it covers every licensed acute care hospital, skilled nursing facility, and intermediate care facility within the county. The order requires healthcare personnel to receive a vaccine or wear a mask for the entire duration of the season. And the order covers or defines healthcare personnel as all persons, including paid and unpaid employees, contractors, students, volunteers who work in patient care areas that provide care or have direct contact with patients. In terms of the duration of the order, it applies each flu season unless otherwise rescinded, and it goes from November 1st until March 31st of the following year. The only caveat to this timeline is that it could be expanded depending on surveillance data. Along with the health officer order, we decided it would be important to conduct an evaluation to assess the impact of the order. First, we assessed the impact of healthcare personnel vaccination rates. Second, we evaluated the incidence of nosocomial infections. Third, we determined employee absenteeism. And fourth, we sought to understand the difficulty of implementation, acceptance, and resistance among healthcare personnel related to the order. Our approach was to include 94 facilities in our study. Data were collected for two influenza seasons before the order was implemented and one season after the order was implemented, so 2011 to 12, 12 to 13, and 13 to 14. We used four data sources in this evaluation, including healthcare personnel vaccination data from the California Department of Public Health, laboratory data from lab directors reporting all positive influenza test results. The third item was survey data, which our infection preventionists filled out, and then finally absenteeism data from HR or employee health that reported time off or sick leave during the respective influenza seasons. Completeness of data varied among the four data sources. 94 facilities reported healthcare personnel vaccination data, and that was the California Department of Public Health data. 52 infection preventionists in our county completed this survey, and 40 lab directors reported the positive influenza test results, and 38 completed absenteeism forms. This slide shows characteristics of the participating facilities. So on average, there are about two IPs per facility, though that ranges from 1 to 12. The bed capacity on average was about 262, though the majority of our facilities are medium-sized facilities, and we define that as 101 to 350 beds. We had 16 facilities that participated that had residency programs, and 31 of those facilities had implemented a masking policy before our order ever came about. Healthcare personnel vaccination rates in the two seasons before the order reached about 60%. However, in the year of the order, 80% of healthcare personnel vaccination was reached, with a reduction in vaccination declination, recalling that these individuals who declined vaccination are required to wear a mask for the duration of the flu season. So let's jump back to 2011 to 12 influenza season before the order was implemented. This slide shows vaccination coverage rates of these facilities in Los Angeles. And as you can see, there's a substantial variation ranging from 22% to 97%, with the most vaccination being between 40 to 60%. In 2012 to 13, the situation was very similar, and it almost looks like the slide never changed. However, following implementation of the order, the situation was markedly different. Our lowest vaccination rate was 33%, with the highest being 98%. And there are two items I'd like to emphasize here. First is the increase in vaccination rates, and second is the reduction in variation between the facilities. Facilities that had lower vaccination rates were brought up to greater vaccination rates, and the greatest impact was among facilities that had lower rates, as there was more room for improvement. Given the variation that we saw each year between the seasons, we were curious what factors were significantly associated with vaccination rates. So we conducted a multivariate analysis, with the outcome being vaccination rates per season. And the number of IPs wasn't significant at an alpha of 0.05, but having a policy in place before the order was implemented was statistically significant in the two multivariate models for the two seasons before the order was implemented. And then after the order was implemented, the two items that were most important were the number of IPs and the facility size. We were also curious about the delta, so the change between season 2 and season 3, so 2012 to 13 and 13 to 14. And here you can see that what this sort of finding means is the greatest increase in vaccinations occurred among facilities that had the lowest vaccination rates before the order. And 2012 to 13 employee vaccination was the only significantly associated independent variable in the multivariate model. I mentioned earlier that we were interested in nosocomial and influenza and calculating those, and we found that the number of nosocomial influenza increased each year, even after the order, and the same increases are true for the proportion of nosocomial infections. This seems very much counterintuitive. One reason that this could have happened is because of reporting bias. Perhaps facilities are keeping better records and maybe monitoring for nosocomial influenza in more recent flu seasons versus the earlier flu seasons. Really quickly, to discuss absenteeism, we hypothesize that the order may have had an impact on reducing absenteeism. Without taking any other factors into account, it appears absenteeism decreased from season 2 to season 3. Though there's not a significant difference between those two seasons, the difference could have been related to other circulating illnesses like RSV. And then the last arm of the study, we wanted to look at implementation and evaluating implementation, acceptance, and enforcement of the order. So the larger numbers illustrate ease, whereas the smaller numbers illustrate higher levels of difficulty on this scale. And our IP survey results indicated that overall the order was mostly accepted and fairly easy to enforce. Many of our infection preventionists were anxious for us to release a mandate requiring healthcare personnel to be vaccinated against influenza. As you can imagine, the Los Angeles experience was that the mandate was well received among IPs. However, there was pushback from nurses and nursing unions in our county. So if you haven't already, but you're interested in implementing maybe a similar mandate for vaccination or masking, I'd encourage you to consider evaluating the implications of the mandate among your healthcare community. By doing so, you'd be able to address the opportunities and challenges within focus groups or mandate champions before your mandate is formally implemented. Just really quickly to discuss study limitations, and then I'll wrap up. There are a few limitations I'd like to highlight. First, we can't independently confirm the validity of the data. We don't know how facilities are querying their systems for laboratory or absenteeism data. For example, all positive test results were not reported by labs that reported nosocomial influenza. As a result, we've contacted these individual facilities to ask them to query their systems to ensure we're capturing all positive influenza results, including community and hospital onset cases. Some facilities also reported their absenteeism data slightly different. So some facilities were able to differentiate between paid time off and sick leave. So that was another limitation. In addition, certain arms of the study have limited participant responses and incomplete data. And the only arm of the study that we had 100% participation was for healthcare personnel vaccination. And there's also inherent variability between flu seasons, which creates a challenge when analyzing data across seasons. In terms of conclusions and next steps, overall, the order positively impacted vaccination rates, and that's what we really wanted to see. For the upcoming flu season, the Department of Public Health is focusing prevention efforts on the facilities that had lower vaccination rates, the smaller facilities, and those with fewer infection preventionists. Our goal is to have all 94 acute care facilities at the 90% vaccination rate before 2020. And if this trend continues, there's little doubt that we'll reach that goal. Further, the Department of Public Health is continuing to monitor and measure healthcare personnel vaccination rates and implications, and we have a team specifically dedicated to hospitals, so we're using our healthcare outreach unit nurses to assist with data collection and consulting with infection preventionists to identify gaps, challenges, and opportunities for strengthening vaccination programs. We've also gotten slightly over 50% of our facilities to confer rights for this particular module in NHSN, and this is one less piece of data that we'll have to collect in future or ask them for. I just want to acknowledge CSTE for the opportunity to be a part of this fellowship and conduct this evaluation. I'd like to thank you for being here, and I'd also like to acknowledge my colleagues from the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, and specifically my mentors, Don Tereshita, Dr. Benjamin Schwartz, and Lorene Mascola, as well as our colleagues in our healthcare facilities. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. We do have a few minutes for some questions. Please stand up to the mic if you have any for any of our wonderful presenters today.
I have more of a comment for Jessica, because I think one of the things that's really critical, I think it was great that you looked at nosocomial infections, but it's always something that we talk about, and it's such a challenge because of the differing influenza infections that happen season to season. So. Those numbers are not surprising to us. We saw very little flu in 11-12, so to not have that level of influenza in that season nosocomial versus what we saw in the subsequent season. So it's really hard to make those comparisons, but great work in what you did there.
Thank you.
Any questions for any of our presenters?
No, I have a question. Sorry, I keep asking. What is the evidence that a person got the vaccine, especially when I can vaccinate myself and vaccinate others, I can assure you, I know that I'm vaccinated. Just really, just a thought. This is, again, I don't really mean to doubt the honesty of healthcare providers. Especially when we see that the rate of infection is increasing. So I think really this is important that you have to be vaccinated by your colleague. And I don't really know if this is a major gap. And the second one is, it's again, great presentation, thank you. Who are the people who are not being vaccinated? But are they males? Are they female? Race, ethnicity? Are they doctors, the nurses, PAs, work with patients, don't work with patients? Because probably all those clinicians, and again, I'm just talking from the top of my head, probably all the clinicians are vaccinated, while the people who are in the hospital or volunteers are not. So I think it's a good idea to identify them very granular way to reveal them to the lawmakers and to the health officers that he will write a technical bulletin, and she will write a technical bulletin, which will say that we want those people, the specific category, to be vaccinated. Thank you. Great.
Hi, I'm Karen Martin from the Minnesota Department of Health, and I have a question about acute flaccid myelitis. And I was just wondering, in all of your cases that were tested at CDC, and I know that the process and the time that went into testing was pretty significant, but since this is a condition that we're going to continue to do surveillance for, were there other patterns or other pathogens that you detected that were more common than others?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I can go over that traumatizing slide that I showed earlier at the end of this view, but there really wasn't. I mean, we tested for a variety of viral families that I had mentioned on our laboratory algorithm, and there wasn't anything else that came up as predominant. So we had, for example, we had stool testing done, and there was eleven samples that were positive, but it was really a mix of enteroviruses and human rhinoviruses and a couple of Coxsackie viruses. So there wasn't anything else that was as predominant the way that the EVD68 and the respiratory specimens was.
But just for comment, we had three cases in Minnesota, and two of them were positive for ECHO 11. So I was just curious if that was reflected in any of your results.
We did have a couple of ECHO 11s in different types of specimens, but again, nothing. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks. Other questions? Comments? Everybody wants to go out? All right, if there's no more questions, thanks everybody.